listening to The Ouachita Chronicles.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Ashley.
What's going on today?
Oh, just reminiscing down memory lane, thinking of our guest today and when I first encountered him.
Oh, man, I don't remember when I first encountered him, but I don't think I know your story, so lay it on me.
Well, our guest, James Earl Turner, and I first began my media career here in MENA, and he was not very fond of my boss at the time and proceeded to tell me in a very eloquent way that he was not fond of my boss, and I said that he didn't have to be fond of my boss, but he did have to deal with me. Right. And we were friends ever after.
You know, he is very eloquent. He doesn't mince words, though.
Mm-mm.
If he's not a fan of you,
you'll know it.
Yeah, he's going to let you know, but he's not ever going to be mean about it.
No.
And I admire that about him for sure. You and I were visiting, obviously, outside of this recording here, but we were talking about our guest. And I'm just going to put it right out there. We laid down some specific ground rules about what we wanted to talk about in this episode. And my main rule there was, we avoid politics at all costs.
Oh, yeah. Politics can be icky. And I think I said to you that people are not politics.
People are more than their politics.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So while today's guest is a politician, he's many, many other things. There's absolutely always more to the story. And that's what we try to do here on the Ouachita Chronicles, mm-hmm, is discover those stories, share them. And we were able to get James Earl to tell us some dang good stories,
absolutely,
I think. So we ready to hear those stories?
I'm ready to hear him.
Let's do it. Welcome to this episode of the Ouachita Chronicles. I'm your host, Ashley Smith, along with my co-host, Jerry.
Hey.
Hey. And our guest in the studio today is none other than James Earl Turner.
Hello.
Thank you for saying hi, James Earl. We're glad to have you here. James Earl is a man of many facets. Mm-hmm. You are a MENA native, correct?
I am. Cool. I grew up here, born, grew up here, left when I was about 33. And was gone for about 18 years and came back.
Okay, so. But you spent your teenage years here, mm-hmm, for sure.
Dragon Maine.
Well, I was going to say, tell us a little bit more about growing up in MENA during those years, because we know it's so very different now.
It's a lot different. I mean, back then there was no Walmart. There was no Northside Shopping Center. Pretty much all the businesses were up and down MENA Street. Fred's was where Sears closed up this year at. That was our gathering place on Friday and Saturday nights late. Dragon Maine back then, that was the big thing. We'd circle through the parking lot by the courthouse or make the block and down on the other end around the block where Washburn's is or circle around in the parking lot there. And I mean, that was the thing to do on Friday and Saturday night. Four or five guys in the car, Dragon Maine, and trying to find girls. And five or six girls in the car supposedly trying to find guys, and there's no way we could get together. But.
I'm picturing those scenes from Dazed and Confused. That's what it's reminding me of. As far as, you know, things to do for teenagers back then, I mean, you said Dragon Maine was really the main thing, but didn't there used to be a drive-in movie theater?
There was a drive-in theater out where the Exxon and Wendy's is, mm-hmm, and the post office all back in there. In the warm weather months, a lot of people went there. I don't know that actually saw a lot of movies.
Because you were too busy making out in the back.
Yeah, otherwise preoccupied.
I think they called that necking.
Necking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that was one thing. Back then, it was a little different for the kids. We drank, you know, teenagers, but it wasn't as big a deal as it is now. I don't remember us having as much problems with it as they do now. It should have been more strictly enforced back then, but I remember, you know, we got stopped a few times, and I think it's been closed for two or three years now. There was a Girl Scout camp out at board camp, and some of my friends one night made a trip through the Girl Scout camp, and one of them knew it because he had helped deliver milk and stuff there one year when he was younger, a little younger. So the next night, there was some others. They just wanted to drive through, you know, see the girls. But the ladies that were over the camp, they got kind of upset when you did that.
I can't imagine why.
So myself and the guy I was riding with, and I don't know if there's one or two others with us, we didn't go through that night, honestly. But we made a circle to kind of run interference. And the ones that did go through, they came around that county road that way, and supposedly we were going to kind of slow them down to keep them from getting caught. Well, we missed a curve, run out in the briars, had a flat, no spare. So we come back out on the highway, and we're driving along plump, 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 go by the entrance to the Girl Scout camp, and we stopped up at what at that time was a little country store to see if they had any air or, you know, anything. And so while we were there, one of these ladies pulls up behind us and jumps out and starts writing down a license number. Well, about that time, the state trooper that was here and one of the deputies pulled up. In fact, back up a little bit, between the camp and there, they had stopped us and asked us if we had went through the Girl Scout camp and said no, and asked the friend of mine that was driving if, you know, if we had, and if we'd been drinking, and no, we hadn't been drinking anything, and hadn't much, maybe a beer apiece. But he said, did you go through last night? And he said, no. Oh, yeah, I did. But these guys weren't with me. They weren't with me. So then we got up there, and the lady comes out, and the trooper and the deputy pull back in, and we told the lady, said, we've already been stopped by the police. They already know what's going on. And she said, I'm just getting the license number. And the trooper, he came up and said, we've got it under control. We've already talked to him. And so anyway, they gave the driver a ride into town to get a spare at his parents' house. We came back out and we got the car going and got back to town. But there was three or four others, I think, the same night that went in there. And they were on foot. And one of them, trying to get away, ran under a little bridge and knocked himself out on the beam underneath. Another one, the ladies cornered him. I mean, cars from three different directions, and he was trapped in the middle. So that was kind of a good sport back then for a little while.
Yeah, hunting Girl Scouts.
But the trooper said, you know, guys, I understand you just want to drive through and see the girls, but said, please don't do it. Said, every time you do, they call us. We got to come out here and try to calm them down. So just don't do it. So that was one of our summer ventures back during that time.
So going to high school in Mena, you were at what is, you know, now abandoned. Abandoned's not really the right word, but empty.
Mm-hmm. Vacant.
Vacant, the old middle school, which was the high school at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had the pleasure of going to middle school in that building. And it's a very, very neat building. Very mm-hmm. interesting. A lot of different things about it. Do you have any really good stories from high school at that building or any of the teachers or things that might stand out?
You know, it was... Of course, back then, there was no air conditioning in the building.
Oof.
We'd start school the last few years. We started the middle of August, kind of like they do now. Originally, for a long time, we didn't start till the Monday or Tuesday after Labor Day. But they started starting in August, and it was so hot you couldn't stay. So they'd let school out at 1 o'clock till it started cooling off. One time, I remember we had a Christmas tree in the kind of the lobby area of the annex that sticks out towards Mena Street.
Right.
By where the library used to be and everything. The tree ended up with some special ornaments on it.
Oh, my.
That shouldn't have been there.
Uh-huh.
But the people, you know, the students all knew who did it. I don't know if the teachers figured out or not, but not really appropriate for Christmas. We all got in one time, it was a big fad of yo-yos. Everybody's carrying yo-yos around up and down the hall during the between classes.
Kind of like fidget spinners were for a while now.
And of course, there's no elevator back then. It was all up and down the stairs. And we had a lot of really good teachers. One of my favorites, I had several. I'll say one or two of my favorites. Harold Coogan was one of my favorite teachers. Harold mm-hmm. is, and I still just love Harold and his history stories. And
well,
everything.
He can still tell a good historical story. Yes.
He can. Leon Myers was another one of my favorite teachers. Something with Leon, I had known Leon as Leon from the time I was a little kid because they were friends with my mother and dad and Jewel and Delbert Hughes, if you remember them. So I grew up around Leon. So one of my big things was to remember not to call him Leon, to call him Mr. Myers. And I had the same thing with Joe Manning, who was one of my other favorite teachers, because he and Kay had lived in my grandmother's apartments, one upstairs and one downstairs. Joe was upstairs, and they got to dating about the time the song Not Three Times on uh-huh. the Ceiling, If You Want Me.
I like that one, yeah.
And so they got to dating and decided they were going to get married, and my grandmother told them, said, well, they were going to wait till summer, and she said, well, I don't know why you're going to wait till then. You're doing everything but sleeping together anyway. You're eating together, and you're staying, you know,
goodness.
Watching. So they did. They got married a little earlier than they had planned because she was renting them the apartments. She always loved to have school teachers in her apartment. We've got a lot of good teachers
mm-hmm.
now, but there are, I think maybe some of their morals, not here, but in places, aren't quite what they were 50 years ago.
Yeah. Well, so in small town anyways, you know, there's a big difference. Right. Yeah.
But she always liked school teachers because they didn't cause her any problems. They paid the rent. You know, they were just good renters.
Mm-hmm.
And of course she wasn't but a block from the high school. And so that always worked out good for her. She had a lot of different ones. But a lot of people that I run into a little older than me, that was their first apartment when they got married. They rented that apartment for her.
Are those still standing? Is that
No.
Okay.
They were two-story apartments. When I was real little, my mother and dad lived upstairs for a while, and he had a plumbing shop in the lower level. And originally, I think when they built them, my grandmother had a laundry back when they weren't self-serve laundries. Mm-hmm. You brought your clothes and they'd wash them. And then after he moved his plumbing shop out in probably, I'm going to say 57 or 58, they converted it to an apartment. And they stayed until, I think when Pat Page and Danny Thrillkill bought it, I think's when they tore the apartment down. The house that sits out by the Ozark Inn, the little Victorian-looking house, gray.
Okay, yeah.
It sat right there on the corner.
Okay.
That was my grandmother's house. And the duplex, two-story, sat behind it next to the alley. And then there was Miss Sanford originally lived in the house about where Thrillkill's office is now. But I was, you know, when I was little, my mother and dad lived across the alley, and I stayed with my grandmother most of the time. And as long as I didn't get out, you know, I could run around the whole block.
So you've been running the streets since you were a young toddler.
Yep.
Young tyke.
Yep.
Well, it's a safe place to do that.
Yeah.
I got set up one time, though. Apparently, I had went out in the street a time or two, and one of our local citizens that was friends with the family saw me, and I think he told my grandmother. So they set me up, and so I got caught out in the street. And she had this term of keen hickory switch, which was a little fine. It didn't have to be hickory, but man, when she started working over the back of your legs, you knew you didn't do that again.
Uh-huh.
She was a feisty little thing. She weighed about 95 pounds, but she was a feisty little old lady.
A completely different era of discipline.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you got caught doing that today, they'd have DHS on you. And, you know, and I think that's part of what's wrong with, well, not just the kids, a lot of the adults today is they didn't have any real discipline growing up. It didn't hurt me. I thought I was dying then, but that didn't hurt me. And
you've turned into a pretty upstanding citizen, I'd say.
Well, finally.
Finally. Took some work, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I had a little time in the not really midlife, but adulthood that I still need a little growing up.
I think we all do. Well, speaking of family businesses, because you were talking about your grandma having the apartments, and we know that you operate Glen Air Construction along with, you know, some side stuff, but your father had a business in Mena.
He did. He had a plumbing business in the 50s. And to be real honest about things, my dad, you know, a lot of the older folks know it, but he was an alcoholic. And he had a real drinking problem, nearly killed him in the late 50s. Had cirrhosis of the liver, and I mean, it was serious. And the doctor told him, said, if you ever take another drink, it'll kill you. Well, he quit drinking. I found out years later from a friend of his that he was over at his house after he'd got out of the hospital and everything, and asked him if he had something to drink, and he knew the history, and he was a little apprehensive about it, but he said, yeah. So he said he got a bottle out and said, Daddy took one drink, capped it up, and they put it up. And he said, I just wanted to prove that one more wouldn't kill me. But I've seen times when I was a kid at deer camp, and, you know, a lot of deer camps, it's just a big drunk.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been in the ones I've been involved with for the last 40-plus years, but he'd sit around and watch them drink his coffee and make sure they didn't fall in the fire or something. But, you know, it had to be a terrible temptation to him.
Oh, yeah.
Even not long before he got sick, I hadn't drank since 1990. I did enough before that to make up for it. And I said, I don't miss it. And he said, oh, I do. He said, I'd love to have a drink right now. But he knew he couldn't. And he hadn't since about 1959, except for that one. He had the plumbing business, and then he started building houses when he got over the being in the hospital and everything. And they'd close the hardware store and plumbing business out, and he started building houses and ended up built over 60 houses in the area. And he started using the Glen Air Construction name in 1959 when he started building houses. He built a lot of spec houses. He built several custom homes over the period of time. And then I built several, not a lot, but several, a few after that. We had a lumber yard then in 71. We bought it from Landers Mara and ran it till 1981. And I started back in about 77 building again and used up some lots we had in a subdivision my dad had built. And then in 81, we closed the lumber yard out and he basically retired it at 54 years old. And
nice. That's unheard of today.
Well, I can remember when I was younger, before I got married, him talking, said, well, if we do this, then I can retire. And he pretty much retired. He started deer hunting more, started turkey hunting. He had never turkey hunted until the spring after we closed the business out. My mother kept working until she was 62. And during that time, he kept the house clean. He always had a cake or something baked. He did a lot of the cooking. He raised a big garden and he gave a lot of it away to people. After he got sick, I didn't have any idea how many people he'd stop and check on and see how they were doing and bring them produce from the garden. And you know, it just, he didn't want a lot of recognition for any of that, but he helped a lot of people. And he never missed an occasion to give my mother flowers. And she always said that she felt like he spent the rest of his life trying to make up for the first few years when he was drinking so much and all the misery that he caused her, but trying to make that up for the rest of his life.
Well, that's better than not owning it, you know, much better.
Yeah. So it was, I'm an only child, but I grew up with some discipline, but...
That switch discipline.
Yeah, that and encouraging truthfulness and honesty. And my dad was a member of the Masonic Lodge from 1958, and I'll have 46 years this summer that I've been in the lodge. And that meant a lot to him. That helped him a lot, I think. He wasn't a real religious person. He didn't go to church very often, but he believed in God and he believed in helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I guess where I got a lot of mine. But he wasn't one to get up and speak in front of people or something like this. He would have never
participated in.
But it never bothered me too much to get up in front of a group and speak if I had an idea what I wanted to say. And
well, we're definitely going to touch on that. I have a quick question, though, that I've actually always wondered. You said your father started Glen Air Construction. What's the story behind that name?
I don't know.
There's not one? Or you just don't know?
His name was Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
And another little funny thing, he insisted all his life it was G-L-E-N, one N. You know, a lot of people spell Glenn with two N's.
Mm-hmm.
When he passed away, we found his birth certificate and it had two N's.
He just decided to change it.
I know he knew there was a community, a planned community or something near Chicago named Glen Air. He knew that, but I don't know if he just saw that and thought that'd be a neat name or what. But with us, if you look up Glen Air, like on Better Business Bureau, it says we've been in business since 1959,
nice.
Which, you know, we had a little gap there. But when Eric and I decided to start the business back, we decided to use the Glen Air name. And we just did Glen Air Construction. When he did it, it was Glen Air Construction and Supply. And while we had the lumber yard, we just used Glen Air Supply. And we just used Glen Air Construction, but we incorporated it. So I thought that would be a kind of a tribute to him. And a lot of the older people around would probably remember Glen Air and the lumber yard and stuff.
Well, it's been a very recognizable name in the community for a long time.
I understand that you've had some time on stage.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your ventures into the stage.
Well, I always thought it would be fun. Washita Little Theater started in about 1980, 79 or 80, when they did their first production, a dinner theater at the old cafeteria, high school cafeteria. And in 1981, Nancy and I split up, and I needed something to do. And I thought, well, this would be a chance. So I auditioned for The Mousetrap with the OLT, and I got the part as Giles Ralston. And we kind of revamped the script a little because the age groups that we had didn't really fit the play. It was like, you know, talking about your parents or something. But that's where I got involved in the theater, was with The Mousetrap, and met some of the people, some great folks. One of them just passed away recently, Gwen Dilbeck. She was in The Mousetrap with me. But I did, I think, about 7 shows with OLT and built set for probably 4 or 5 of them. Building set was not my favorite thing because that's what I did during the day, but I loved being on stage. I loved comedies. I'm not musical.
Oh, what? You don't want to sing us a song?
No. Some people, including my wife, say that probably if I had a little coaching that I could sing. But, you know, they say that speaking in public is the number one fear of people. Dying's number five or four or five. So most people would rather die than speak in public. That's why I am about singing in public. But speaking generally doesn't bother me much.
I agree with you 100%, James Earl. I would rather die than sing in front of people.
Yeah.
But I'll get up and speak in front of anybody at any time. Even when they don't want me to, I will do that.
She does.
Yeah. I was in several comedies. I was in one. It was Prisoner of Second Avenue, which I watched on TV here a while back. It was myself and the lady that played my wife, except for four or five pages of the entire script was us. That was one that was really funny. I think the lady that was playing my wife, she didn't really know the story so much, but she knew the cue lines, which is both are important. But she knew if I said this, she said that. Well, one night during production, not during dress rehearsal, where I come in and we start through some of her stuff, and all of a sudden my mind says, we shouldn't be here yet. So I kind of figured out where we should be, and I jumped back to there, and she just followed me, I mean, without question. And that put me off stage in just a few lines, like I was going to the bathroom to check the medicine cabinet, because our apartment had been broken into and stuff stolen. And I went to the stage manager, and I said, where are we? And he pointed on the script, and I said, where are we supposed to be? And he said, flip, 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 right here. I said, okay. So I went back. We did all the lines up to where we had started the wrong spot, skipped what we'd already said, and then went on with the lines.
That's thinking on your feet.
Yeah.
Well, and it was one of them that writes all the crazy, funny stuff. So most people didn't even know it. But Iwana and the director and Vault at that time, Hughes now, they're both looking at each other and saying, what is he doing? That was one fun part of theater is being able to ad-lib. Because the worst thing is to let people know that you're lost. Mm-hmm. If you stay in character, they don't really notice.
No, because they don't have the lines in front of them. They have no idea.
We started a theater group in Benton, Arkansas. And the first full year, they elected me president because I had experience over here. I'd been on the board and vice president. Got to do the Mousetrap again with the same character. But we did like a dinner variety show to raise money. And we did it at Saline Memorial Hospital. And they cooked a really nice gourmet type meal and had a lot of the local dignitaries and stuff there. And they had me as the moderator in a Will Rogers type character. And I would talk between the pieces. And we had some comedy, some singing, you know, just different stuff. So we did it. And it, you know, it was a real pretty good successful deal. Well, over at, I think it was Traskwood, they asked us if we'd come over there and do it again to help them raise a little money for something there at their community center or something. But one of our acts couldn't make it, so they dropped out. So I was having to piece two of my monologues together, you know, to keep it going. So we just had kind of a little stage set up and a cubicle partition thing I could sit down behind. Well, we brought this guy from California with us. He was sitting in the audience with Iwana. And I don't know if you've ever seen Clear and Present Danger with Harrison Ford.
It's been a long time.
It was this scene, particular scene is he came out of the Naval Academy where he was teaching and the bad guys after his wife. And he comes out and I think there was some shooting maybe going on. And this Marine walks up and bangs on his window and says, are you all right? That was his big lines. That was this guy that was sitting with Iwana. So he was an actor. I mean, he was a paid actor. But anyway, I got to these where I was piecing these together, and I got the first half done, and I went blank. I'm trying to think of the line, but I said, have you ever been on stage and just plumb forgot what you're supposed to say? And then it came to me, and I went right on, and Iwana said he looked over at her and said, great save.
Right. Right.
But I just stayed in character, you know, and everybody died laughing, and it worked.
It was another success, yeah.
Yeah, but the worst thing you can do on stage is have somebody give you what you're supposed to say. But there's been a lot of times on stage that you'd say, well, like on Golden Pond, I was sitting there trying to see if I was Bill Ray, trying to see if I could sleep with the father's daughter. mm-hmm. while we were at their cabin. And he went blank, didn't know his line. And we sat there and I picked up some newspapers and kind of flipping through them. It's kind of a tense, nervous moment anyway. And finally, I could see he wasn't going to come to it. And I said, I don't care. I mean, we can sleep here or we can sleep there. And that keyed him and he come back with his line. And that's the fun part of it. I wish I had the time and everything to be involved now. But I've had nightmares that I was going on stage and I didn't know my lines. In fact, here a while back, I had one that I was going on and I didn't even know what it was about. I couldn't even ad lib.
Well, the OLT looked quite a bit different than it does now.
I'm sure we started, Lita Benson and Richard, they're the ones that started it. They had come from Iowa City, Iowa, and had been involved in theater up there. And so they got some people together that wanted to start a theater, and they knew what to do and how to do it. And Lita was she was another feisty little, but she was good. She knew her stuff. But we all were doing it to have some fun, too. And we'd be in rehearsal, and we'd be cutting up a little bit. She'd say, stop it. Act professional. Well, we always did. When it came to dress rehearsal and the performances, it was professional. But we wanted to have some fun, you know, getting there. Because if we weren't having fun, why do it?
Why do it?
We weren't getting paid for it or anything. If we'd been getting paid, I could be professional the whole time. But we were doing one show, something with Durwood and Francis Brett, and Ann and I was in it. And Richard was directing. And Durwood was having a little problem with his lines. That's the only show he'd been in. And as far as I know, the last one he was in. And the rest of us pretty much had our lines down. And Richard just blew up on Durwood one. Well, he didn't. Well, I think he did pretty much direct it at Durwood, not just in general. And I just unloaded on him. I told him we were doing the best we could do, and hollering and screaming wasn't going to make it any better. And I went off stage, and everybody back there is applauding and thank you. But it ended up a good show. I mean, it was fun. All of them were. We just had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, when I say that the OLT looked a lot different, I mean specifically the building.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I mean, it seats a lot less now than it used to, basically.
Yeah, and I did a few shows, two or three, I guess, there. But when I first got involved, we didn't have a home. We did most of our shows in the high school auditorium.
So you weren't even at the Lyric Theater.
I was either vice president or on the board when we bought the building. Somebody called me one Saturday morning and said, we've been offered the opportunity to buy the Lyric Theater building. And I met some of the others that was on the board and stuff down there. And we went through the building, looked at it upstairs, backstage, went up on the roof and checked things, which that was interesting. That ladder straight up. But that's when we incorporated the theater and got the 501c3 designation, and we got a loan from the bank and bought it. It had a big backstage area.
What kind of condition was it in at that time?
It was not terrible, but, you know, it was just, even then, it was a 50, 60-year-old building. And the restrooms were not very nice at all compared to what they are now. I don't know if you've seen the catwalks and stuff upstairs. They built those. Some of them were built while I was still involved. Some of them were built later to get up to the lighting and everything. Howard Goins passed away this week. That's where I met Howard, was doing sound and lighting in that building. Howard was just about a genius on the sound effects and stuff. He was really good. But the backstage area, I mean, there's a lot of room. There was actually sort of a basement under the backstage area, and had our dressing rooms and everything. And then, of course, after the tornado, we were gone when the first tornado hit that took the back of the building off.
You guys had moved out of town at that time.
Yeah, we moved to Central Arkansas. But I would love to perform in the building now because it's so much more intimate.
Right, right. You know, I wonder what the original seating was compared to now.
It was probably at least twice what it is now.
So, listeners, I just want you to be able to visualize that, you know, this was a theater and the stage, obviously, it's set up just like your normal theater where you've got the seats that are higher at the back, goes down,
right.
And, you know, of course, the stage down below that. Well, what we haven't got the chance to experience, you know, in this age is that this theater used to be much bigger, so the stage was farther away. And when that tornado came through, because it was the 93...
Yeah, November 13th, 1993.
Right. It took like the whole back half of the building off. So it demolished the stage and all that seating right there. So when they went to rebuild, they didn't try to rebuild that original part of the building. They just pulled the stage forward. and then rebuilt that back. So they lost. That's why I'm saying they lost a lot of seating, because it essentially just made the whole theater smaller.
But it made it, like I said, so much more intimate. In Benton, we did some shows in the theater over there. We did Our Town. It was the first production we did. And their theater seated 1,200 people. Mm. And if you're on stage and you've got 100 people there, if you're in the OLT theater, you've got a pretty full house. You know, it makes you, it really energizes you. Mm-hmm. When you're in a theater or venue like Performing Arts here would be, but Benton's is even bigger, and you've got 100 people, it's like,
it looks pretty sparse
here,
right?
Yeah, and it's harder to really get energized and get, because you react with the audience. I mean, the one I was telling you about where we left out those lines one night, it was just dead. Nobody was laughing at any of the lines or anything. And I had a line, we were talking about leaving New York and going somewhere, and it was a line, you know, we can go to Vermont, something about maple syrup, or we could go to Oregon. People, loggers are sitting around sawing the legs off their chairs. They have nothing else to do. And I said, sawing the chairs off their legs. And everybody just died laughing, and it broke me up. And I turned my back on the audience, which on theater is a big no-no. If you're doing film, then that's okay. But I had to turn my back on the audience. But from there on, we had a good reaction, and that really helps energize you. And speaking about film, I did some film acting classes when I was in Little Rock. Of course, when I was doing theater here, the only time we ever used mics was in musicals. We would mic musicals, but anything else, if we were in the old auditorium that got destroyed in the tornado, we were expected to project to the back of that auditorium with no mics. But you couldn't do it. You had to project, not holler. And Lita was always project, project, project. So that's the way, you know, I was on stage. You projected so they heard you at the back of the building. Well, I started doing the film acting classes, and I would be projecting. And the guy that had the school, he'd come up one night and he says, "What color's your hair?" I had hair then.
Oh.
And I said, "Brown." He said, "That's the level you've got to do." Said, "If you're on film," so they're going to have a microphone right here, just out of the picture. So you don't have to project. That was a really fun experience.
Where was this acting class at?
It was in Little Rock. It was a guy that had the acting class. It was certified through the state as a private school and everything. And he actually did a little acting. He was actually appointed head of the film commission with Mike Huckabee, but he wanted to keep his acting school going, I think. And I said, "No, you can't. If you're going to be the film commission, the film commission, it's a one-person commission. You can't have anything else." And it didn't work out. He didn't stay very long. I don't know whatever happened to him, but it was interesting. It was a lot different than stage acting. And we had one night where we just did improv, and that was a lot of fun. I'd love to do more of that.
Jerry and I, we do a little bit of improv in our spare time.
Spare time, part-time.
And she had really been like, "Well, we just need to do some improv with James Earl." And I was like, "Oh no, I'm afraid we can't keep it clean enough, Jerry." That's how we are. Well, you had mentioned the old auditorium at the high school. Mm-hmm. And Jerry, I'm really sorry you didn't get to see that building. Mm-hmm. That building, that part of the high school, that stage, the way it was laid out. Mm-hmm. I mean, those high school students were very, very lucky. They did not know what they had. So when I went to middle school there, I actually performed on that stage. Mm-hmm. I was Juliet, of course. Why would I not have been? Yeah, but it was amazing. The acoustics in there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was just that flooring. Oh, it was such a beautiful place. And I'm so sad that that didn't get, I mean, I guess it probably couldn't even have been saved. I moved to Mena in 94, right after the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not the one that hurt it. It was the 2009 one. So that's how I got to to actually be in that building. Mm-hmm. But the big one we had in 2009 was the one that took that out. But I didn't go survey that damage or check it out. Was there any way it could have been saved?
I doubt it. You know, I don't know if you know that that building was originally the gym, and it was a rock building.
No, I didn't know that.
After the tornado, when they started tearing it down, you could see a lot of the rock up front. It was built by the CCC or WPA.
Mm, that whole auditorium.
Mm-hmm. And I can remember when I was a kid, real little, because we lived up on 7th Street, and my mother going to town or whatever would come down Hickory a lot of times, so you're looking right at that building. And I can remember them working on it, remodeling it into the auditorium. And something that's really interesting, I think, as I was working over at Central Arkansas Christian Academy when I was working in Little Rock, and Horace Piazza was the architect on that job. And Horace and I had worked together on, I don't know, three or four churches, done several churches. I think he kept seeing how high he could get the ceilings with me. But their gym had been in the kind of the center of the building, and they built a new gym just out beside the building and converted that gym into their auditorium. And one day Horace was there, and we were talking about things, going over stuff. And he said, yeah, this is the second gym I converted into an auditorium. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I did one at MENA years ago when he was just a really young architect. So I always thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because Horace was one of my favorite architects that I worked with. He never learned CAD. He did everything on paper. And I think he's still alive.
Wow.
Chris Piazza, that's a judge in Central Arkansas, is his nephew. And Horace had a brother that was an actor that I used to see a lot on TV that died several years ago. He had another brother that was in the shoe business. But I thought that was interesting. But yeah, that building was originally stone, and they just put a facade on it and plastered over everything. And from what I understand, there was a lot of asbestos in the building.
Oh, great.
And a lot of it had been encapsulated, which is fine. You don't have
to take
it out.
So I was safe when I was there, is what you're saying?
Yeah, because they had what they call encapsulating. You paint over it with a certain paint so it can't get friable, get in the air. But once that tornado hit, tore everything apart, then they had to do something with it.
I wish that, you know, when I was going to school there, that I had known more about the history or even cared about such things, you know, as a 11, 12, 13-year-old, because I would have appreciated it a lot more. I really would. You know, my stepdad always told me stories about him going to high school there while I was in middle school there, but wish that I would have paid more attention to the building, because once I was out of it, I had no reason to go back, and I really regret that now. I've got one more stage acting related question. I've got a big event coming up pretty soon. Would you do my makeup?
I don't know if I could do yours.
Uh-huh.
But I used to do my own.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want to know about.
We had Randy Lindsay.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Lindsay, journalism teacher.
Randy used to do makeup for us. Randy used to do a lot. He used to work stage, too. He got the part I thought I wanted for Rainmaker, and he was the Rainmaker. And I got the older brother, Noah, which was my favorite part that I ever did. He was a real horse's behind. And I loved that part. But Randy used to do my makeup. I think when I was at Benton, I started doing my own. I've got to put together a makeup kit, and I'd do my own makeup before the shows. And still got it. It's probably not any good after all these years.
That stuff expires, James Earl.
I think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wardrobe. What was your favorite character you ever did that involved, you know, the whole, like, because you turn into a different person, and wardrobe's such an important aspect of
wardrobe,
theater.
Makeup, and everything. Like I said, Noah in The Rainmaker was my favorite part. Wasn't a lot of makeup there. The only thing that was really cool there was drinking raw eggs on stage.
Ooh.
Cool? Gross.
Well,
tell me you feigned that.
No, I did it.
Oh, no.
The line was right at the beginning, and the line was my sister had gone to her cousin's. She was going to be an old maid. She was already 17 or 18 years old. Lizzie, I think, was her name. And so Paul was cooking breakfast, and he says, how you want your eggs? And I said, what's the best way you can't ruin them? And he said, raw. And I said, I'll take them raw then. And I told him, I said, if you'll set a glass and hand them to me, I'll break them in the glass and drink them. So they did. I'd start them up.
That's disgusting. And
everybody in the audience is like your reaction was.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was kind of cool. But I did Arsenic and Old Lace, and I shaved my beard down to a goatee, which I didn't like at that time. I had hair, like I said, for the most part. But I played Dr. Einstein, not Albert Herman. Yeah, the plastic surgeon. And I did his face, and that was Boris Karloff in the movie.
Okay.
I did his face.
I'm having a hard time visualizing, but the accent's telling me about all I need to know, I think.
I can picture it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I like I said, I shaved my beard down to a goatee to kind of make the part fit better. And the next weekend, I went to Fayetteville. That's while Iwana was working on her master's. And I didn't like the goatee, so I just shaved it all off. I've had my mustache since June the 2nd, 1972. But I've never shaved it, but I've had my beard off a few times.
How do you remember that?
Well, I remember it because that was the way I remembered my anniversary with my first wife, is it was the day I shaved my mustache last time.
And never again.
I've had nightmares. I've messed it up too. But anyway, I
if Nancy actually listens to this, and just saying, you know, Nancy's still here. I know. We like Nancy, so we, she's going to be
we're
like,
good friends, you know, and she and Iwana hug each other when they see each other. And we're going camping in July over at the lake. Eric and Emily got reservations, and so we found one. I think Nancy's going to be in the next site next to us, but we don't have any problems.
That's the good kind of blended mm-hmm. family you want to have, yeah, for sure.
But anyway, when I got to Fayetteville that next Friday night, I don't think Iwana had ever seen me without my beard.
How did she recognize you?
Well, I knocked on the door in her apartment. She opened the door and she looked at me. Little subtle hint. She said, "Grow it back."
Oh my gosh. Super subtle.
We've had a lot of fun with that.
I like that.
And then I did... I think it was Prisoner's Second Avenue that I dyed my hair dark because it was pretty light. It wasn't gray then, but it was like sun bleached. So I dyed it dark so we could put gray in the sides to make me look older to fit. Because the lady was playing my opposite was probably 15 years older than me. And I like to never got that dye out. My mother told me, said, take permanent solution and put in it and it'll make it wash out. So I did that once and it is black running out. So I'm never doing that again. But
the lengths you'll go to for show business.
Yep.
Well, you've been a firefighter for how long?
I started in 1978 at board camp. That was the year that the rural departments were all started in Polk County. It was a guy that now it's the OES coordinator, but back then they still called it civil defense. And he got it all together to start the rural fire departments because we'd never had anything in the county. If you had a fire in the county, they'd call and they would call around to the MENA department and see if three or four or five guys would take the old 48, I think it was, or 49 fire truck and go see if they could protect the propane tank because usually it was too late time they got there. So he put it all together to start the rural fire departments and I was living at board camp, Nancy and I. So that's where I got involved and I was either the chief or director while I was there. Not a very good one at that age, but we built our first truck basically. He made arrangements to get 5-quarter-ton surplus pickups, military surplus, and the prison industries built the tanks and the side pieces in the county, or forestry, I think, actually bought the pumps. So we had to put it all together and paint it all up and everything. But that was the fire trucks for all the rural departments at that time. And in 1981, when Nancy and I split up, I moved to town, and so I wasn't on anything until 73, and I got on the MENA fire department and was on until we left on January 1st, 87.
You have such a head for dates. I'm amazed by that, but okay, proceed.
A lot of people have been. So we moved to Central Arkansas on that date, and we were actually, if you've been to Little Rock and seen the new heart hospital they're building, we lived in the back corner of that.
Okay.
For the first, I guess, 2 years that we were over there, 2 or 3 years. That was a mobile home park, and that's where our trailer was in that back corner. And then we bought some land south of Bauxite and moved down there until 96, the end of 96, and moved to Texarkana. But in about 94, Eric turned 18. And Shaw Fire Department there, south of Benton, always had a fish fry in the spring. And we went to that, and Iwana had gotten to know some of them, especially some of the brothers, taking the kids to junior football stuff, because I was working out of town most of the time. But anyway, we got over there, and I had brought my training records all over with me. And so Eric turned 18, which made him eligible to get on the fire department. I said, well, we'll get him on. And we did, and we both joined too, Iwana and I and Eric, and they got their intro and PPE and everything. And Iwana and I left at the end of 90. She left in like November 96, and I did at the end of the year.
Hold on, are you telling me that Iwana is a firefighter?
She was. She's a certified firefighter.
Full gear, running in there with the hose, all that stuff you see.
To a large extent, she was backing up the chief when our only business in the district burned. And
Iwana, are you listening? I am so impressed. I never pictured it. Not once.
Yeah.
Iwana is just a super, super sweet woman, but she's very reserved, and I just can't imagine her dashing into the face of danger.
Like I said, she was a full certified firefighter.
That's awesome.
That is so cool.
And then she actually was on Inc. for a while when we came back here. But when we left the Benton area, then I wasn't on anything until we came back. Well, I came back in 04 in the fall and got back on Mena in the spring of 07. And then I was on for about a year, and due to circumstances, I was off for about a year and a half. Even though I went to all the meetings and went to all the fires, I wasn't officially. I was on the Inc. Fire Department, so I was doing mutual aid. But I've been back on since 2010. So altogether, I've got right at 15 years on the Mena Fire Department from the early 80s till now, plus two or three at Shaw and two or three at Board Camp. So, you know, I've always enjoyed being a part of the community and trying to help. As you know, I'm on city council, and local politics or service is always something I wanted to do. I actually kicked around the idea in the 70s when they first started the quorum court system like it is now, and running for JP, and I was like probably 22 or 23 and decided to
not quite ready for that.
Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't have left if I'd have been on the quorum court. You know, you have to think about things in your life, little things that happen, kind of like the butterfly effect, mm-hmm. little things that happen that change the whole
trajectory of
course
everything.
Of your life. If I hadn't done this little thing, then I wouldn't be where I'm at today. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of interesting to think
about.
You're
at that point in your life where you're really reflecting on that, I would imagine.
Yeah, to an extent. You know, I'm still learning. I've always said that I didn't think I'd live long enough to learn all I wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. And as y'all know, I've been kind of easing into some more arts and crafts type stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've been the last several months in the evenings and weekends and stuff studying, trying to learn new software and new things, which is always fascinating. I'm self-taught on AutoCAD. I did that professionally, AutoCAD drafting, for 3 or 4 years. And you know, I've told you before that I'm one of those people that if I'm talking to them, I'm like, yeah, right, you did all that. Mm-hmm. And then I think, well, you know, if they're talking to me, that's what they're saying. But in ways, I admire somebody that works. I've got a good friend. She and I grew up together. She will soon, in the next, I think next year, she'll have 50 years that she's worked for SWEPCO. And I cannot imagine anybody working that long at one place.
Yes, exactly. We ran a little blurb about a gentleman who retired from NEDEC.
Yes.
After 52 I saw that. Yeah.
Years, and we said the exact same thing.
We did.
Can't imagine having done, you know, only one type of job, one mm-hmm. not, you know, surely different positions, but worked at one place for that amount of time. You've done so many different things, like you said. I mean, you've started with your father and the hardware and construction, et cetera, et cetera. And you've gone and you've kept that going, which mm-hmm. is amazing, but that's only just been one small part of all the really cool things that you have done.
I'm always looking for a new challenge. And once I make that challenge and I kind of conquer it, sometimes I think in a big way, sometimes not in a big way, but I've conquered it. I've done what I wanted to do. Now I'm ready for another challenge. One time I decided I was going to learn computer programming. And I spent, I don't know how much time, trying to write a little simple program in C++. And I finally got it where it worked. And I thought, I don't need to know how to write the programs. I'll just learn how to run them.
This wasn't near as much fun as I thought it was going to be. No.
But the challenge was there, and I made that accomplishment. And I thought, okay, that's enough. I'll go learn something else.
We're going to segue into that portion of our show that's the lightning round. So we're going to throw out several questions at you and just give us the first thing that comes to mind. It doesn't have to be, you know, long and involved, but if it is, that's okay. But we just want to hear your responses on these. And
I plead the fifth.
What's your favorite color?
Red.
If you could pick one superpower, what would it be?
Ooh, flying, I guess. I used to dream I could do that when I was a kid.
I think I know the answer to this one already, but I'm going to ask it. Cat person or dog person?
Dog.
I knew that. He's got the cutest dogs. Mm-hmm. He has got the cutest dogs.
If you were going to throw a dinner party and mm-hmm. invite three guests, mm-hmm. living or not living, mm-hmm. who would those three guests be?
One of them would be Thomas Edison.
I've not heard that response before. That's good.
He's always kind of been one of my favorite people because of what he did. I mean, the way he did it and everything. Maybe Ronald Reagan. I always liked him.
He was also an actor.
He was. And who else?
There's that third.
Yeah.
Everybody gets
stuck. That's always a hard
one,
isn't it?
They don't have to be famous.
You know, it might be fun to have Harold at that, with historical figures.
Uh-huh.
Oh, goodness. He'd drive them crazy. He'd have so many questions for those men.
Sure, I don't know. I think he'd have the answers.
Yeah, probably. Shout out to Mr. Coogan. Well, we're going to wrap this up now. James Earl, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me. You two are a couple of my favorite people.
Aww. We try. We're ornery as I'll get out.
You know, we had to kind of get to know each other.
Yeah, we did.
But Pash has done a great job for the A&P, but I still miss you.
Aw, thank you.
She's done good. You trained her well, and she's had some good ideas, too. Well, but anyway, I really enjoy it. I'm glad you invited me, and maybe we get together again sometime.
Yeah, yes.
And please give my love to Iwana. She's a special person. So, all right.
Till next time.
It's time for that portion of the show we call Fast Facts with
Producer Trey.
What's up?
Hey, Trey.
Hey, Ashley.
Okay, so normally during our show, we'll have questions on stuff because while we think we know everything, we obviously don't. We just act like we do. But we'll have questions come up, and we just had a couple that came up during James Earl's interview. One of them, I believe, was he was talking about the Washita Little Theater, which is where the old Lyric Theater was originally. And I think we were wavering back and forth on what the start date was when Washita Little Theater actually formed, started using that building. So what did you find, Producer Trey?
The OLT was officially started in 1979 by Lita Benson. But it wasn't until 1985 that they took possession of the Lyric Theater.
Okay, so yeah, he was right. He had the year right, 79. And when he said Lita, I don't remember hearing him say Benson, but that makes so much sense now because the Benson Awards at Washita Little Theater.
Oh, yeah.
That's their big awards ceremony every year, and they're called the Benson Awards. So that was a nod to their founder. That's pretty cool. The second question we had, and I can't remember the exact context of what James Earl was saying, but he was talking about performing in front of a group and there being, I want to say, an actor there. I really can't remember exactly, but he was reaching hard to remember the lead character's name in the movie Clear and Present Danger.
Yeah, so in Clear and Present Danger, it was starring Harrison Ford, and the character's name was Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan. Oh, Jack Ryan. Harrison Ford. Yeah, okay. I totally get it now. It was a pleasure to have James Earl on. As Jerry and I bantered back and forth in the intro to this episode, people are more than their politics. And we hope that by listening to James Earl's episode that you were able to get some insight into the man behind James Earl, who sits in that city council chair and you might only know one side of. So we were really happy to have him on. We appreciated his time and we got to hear some funny stories and learn some new things about him. As always, thank you for listening to the Washita Chronicles. You can find us along with other great shows at thewashitapodcast.com. You can contact us at thewashitapodcast@gmail.com and make sure you find us on Facebook and Instagram and give us a like. We do love to receive emails, so use that email address if you want to drop us a line or you have a suggestion for a future guest on the show. Until next time, Ashley and Jerry,
out. Thank you for listening to the Washita Chronicles.